going on life in Boston after business school, and then did some entrepreneurial things, and then really needed to make a career change. And as part of that process, got to meet the president of my seminary alma mater, who became the late Bob Cooley, who became really a force within theological education, was a mentor to me, and hired me. He said, I need someone to do a capital campaign. And I said, what's that?
Yeah.
And he said, you'll find out. And so it was the beginning of my career over 35 years ago. And I had the great privilege of seeing him a little bit before he passed away and thanking him for the great influence and all that that was. So that's how I got into it. And I actually, in business school, I'd learned the value of mentors. So it's yes. been, I'm always alert for people from whom I can learn and grow.
I love that. Yeah, mentors are so important in every aspect of life. And have you turned that around? And have you been able to mentor some people in your career along the way?
I guess I have. I'd have to think about who's really benefited. Actually, now that I think about it, out of the blue, one of my earliest residential capital campaigns was a YMCA in Ohio, and there was a young guy. I think he had just graduated from college, and he was a great tennis player. So I wound up buying a tennis racket from him and occasionally playing with him. And Jamie and I would talk about, you know, his aspirations and how to raise money and how the Y was going and so on. And out of the blue, about 4 or 5 years ago, I got an email through, I guess it was through LinkedIn, where he said, I still remember those times and appreciate so much what everything I learned about fundraising I learned from Don Stahl and the
that's amazing.
You know, 25 years ago. So there is one example.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And can you share with us some of the things that he might have stuck with him about learning how to fundraise, or what do you have any golden nuggets to share with us right off the bat about fundraising?
So now
jumping in.
Now explain how to be a successful fundraiser in three easy lessons. Well, first of all, it is not easy. It's and the part that people miss is that it's a process. One of the great legends in fundraising who wrote a book called Designs for Fundraising in 1966, a guy, actually another Jersey guy, he lived in Tenafly, named Cy Seymour. And in the book, he said, you don't fundraise just by showing up and asking. It's like the same way that a cucumber, to become a pickle, you have to not just dip it in juice. You have to leave it in the jar and let it marinate. Words to that effect.
I love that.
And so part of what so many people miss is they think, just like we were jokingly role-playing earlier, is to say, hi, how are you, Nicole? I have a great cause. Could you consider giving us money? Well, no.
Right, right.
And so much of fundraising is developing relationships. And in that sense, it's a very human process. It's a long-term process. Anyone who thinks you can do it quickly or easily often is sadly mistaken. And the hardest part is a new nonprofit getting it started. Mm-hmm. Some of my professional colleagues decline to attempt to coach or get involved with brand new nonprofits. Some people believe we have too many of them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I agree. And I have heard that because there's thousands and thousands, and a lot of people just want to start it because now it's easier to start it, right? You've got the internet and you can throw up a website and get your, you've got a problem you want to address. But people are saying, well, maybe you should look at some of the nonprofits that already exist that cover that problem or near that problem, and you can develop a new program. I mean, there's both sides to it, right? Because starting a nonprofit is no simple endeavor, right?
Yes, I've been involved in some of those, and it was, honestly, Nicole, it was some of the hardest work I've ever done. Although I did share a fun story earlier, be sure to ask me later about my Iowa sojourn story. But to that point, I think one of the trends we're seeing, and certainly we encourage it, is collaboration with other groups, funders, especially foundations, but also sophisticated individual donors, philanthropists, love to see collaboration among nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently on the advisory board of something, of a group that's doing that up in Patterson.
Okay.
They've started something called the Passaic County Justice League, which is a collaboration of seven nonprofits, including my son, stepson, and one of the groups that I'm on the advisory board, Star of Hope Ministries. So it's very exciting to see that sometimes that does happen. And I'll share with you an example of what the Angel Aid group has done in terms of that as we move along in our time together. Yeah.
Yeah, well, why don't we stop real quick and give us an overview of what the Angeletti Group does and who they are and how you came to be involved with them.
Right. I have, in 2012, I returned to New Jersey for a second marriage. Actually, a woman, we had both come to Christ under the same pastor back in youth group days and even dated a little bit. So anyway, it's very exciting. And I got back to Morristown in Morris County, which I never thought I would. I live 12 miles from where I grew up. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The challenge then was I had been on the road for many, many years doing what we call residential capital campaigns, and you would go out and be with the client sometimes for months, sometimes even getting an apartment, and I once got a deposit back on my water bill. I was there so long.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's hard in terms of a family life, and I did not want to do that this round with Liz. So I started looking around for fundraising firms. I actually Googled fundraising firms near Morristown, and up popped a group called the Angeletti Group, and it said right here. And I went, "Wow, how about that?" So and you could ask Jay sometime when you see him. It's very funny. I literally knocked on the door and said, "Hi, here's who I am. I've been working with another firm for many, many years, and would love to explore working with you right here in town." And almost no one has done that. The firm is very much built organically through relationships, which is why it's as strong and as good and as ethical as it is, I think. But he was willing to take a chance on me, and we've had some great fun and great times. And he's just a valued colleague, a brilliant fundraiser, operates at a very, very high level, especially in the medical center area. Virtually every significant medical center in New Jersey has been a client of the firm and with Jay. And we've just hired several people from those who've retired from those places
right.
to join us. So it's exciting, and I think you'd agree. Medical work is so important. In fact, one of my former colleagues, Phil Beekman, is right here in Hunterdon,
oh.
with the Hunterdon Medical Center. So
oh, nice.
A shout out to Phil.
Yes, and the Angeletti Group is very, very prolific in the healthcare industry, and they also do executive search, I think, for nonprofits and philanthropic efforts, and also they have a blog, like it's the Angeletti Group. com, right? And so that they're involved in all kinds of wonderful philanthropic
yes,
endeavors.
Yes, a wide variety of clients. I just mentioned healthcare because it's we're among a small handful of firms that have been privileged to operate with even very complex academic medical centers like Yale.
Oh, wow.
As an example, and I'll share a fun story about our giving back to Yale as we move along.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break there, and then we'll be back, and we'll talk about the Yale story.
Great.
Okay. I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber, As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Help make your community safer. Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers is a community-based program aimed at making our community safer by providing an avenue for citizens to anonymously report criminal activity. It provides monetary rewards if the information leads to an arrest and indictment. See something, say something, and get cash for your anonymous tip. Call or text 1-800-321-0010 or go online to www.crimestoppershunterdon.com.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarolecounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We're on Facebook Live today, and we're talking with Don Stahl. He's a vice president with the Angeletti Group, and if you want to look them up, it's theangelettigroup.com. They're a philanthropic group that works with healthcare and hospitals and all kinds of good stuff, and we're going to hear a story about how you gave back to Yale, I think you were saying?
Yes. One of the most fun events that we did as a team several years ago was Jay had thought about some way to give back and participate with one of our real Tiffany clients at Yale Medical School and Medical Center. And it came up, a bicycle ride called Closer to Free, which is a big, if it's not the largest bicycle event in Connecticut, it's maybe the second largest. Mm-hmm. So as a firm, we all got bicycles and decamped to New Haven.
Wow.
And got hotel rooms and had some wonderful dinner together, and the next day went out through the hills of Connecticut, which I got to tell you, I still remember it. Steep, like sure. Up around Quinnipiac University and so on. But it was great fun. We helped raise some significant amount of money and a huge cause in terms of raising funds for cancer and awareness for cancer and all that. So to me, it's an example of not just billing clients, but actually living in their lives. Yeah. So it was great fun.
I love that. Well, there's a million ways to get involved, whether it's biking or hiking or calling or ladling soup. The goal of the show is to show people how you can get involved in your community locally, globally. There's a gazillion ways. You just have to find the people that you want to hang out with and a cause that you can get behind and go for it, right?
Right.
Well, let's go back to people don't think about being a fundraiser when they grow up. And I think I read recently that the nonprofits are the third largest employer in the U.S. So there's a lot of job opportunities there. A lot of people since the pandemic are rethinking their career choices, how they want to live their life, what they want to do. So can you share with us what skills are needed if you want to get into this profession and what you think makes a good fundraiser?
Well, it's really true that so many people, not just young people, but many people as a second or third career, really take a look at the nonprofit sector. You will not get wealthy, probably, being involved with it, but it will be fulfilling. And so many people are looking for that kind of fulfillment in their lives, without a doubt. Fewer of them, I suspect, are attracted to actually being fundraisers. They would have an image that it's hard, and you've got to be pushy, and you've got to be like a salesperson, you know, and the images of my apologies to anybody who takes offense when I say this, but a used car salesman. And in fact, so much of the best of nonprofit work, and especially fundraising, is listening. It's listening and asking great questions. I shared with you before we got on the air about Leading with Questions, a blog that I'll forward to you. Mm-hmm. And it's really almost, I think it's almost a movement where more and more, I still get sales-oriented blogs, how to be a more effective business developer and in the services sector and so on. And so much of it is, first of all, to be genuine. Mm-hmm. You know, to the extent that you're faking it, people will sense it, so go do something else. And number two is to genuinely ask questions and develop relationships. And three is to be as knowledgeable about whatever that world is as possible. I think, you know, Nicole, one of the beauties of the nonprofit world is if you draw a giant circle, and I do this whenever we get involved with strategic planning, and then slice it up into pies, it's like pie slices, and mm-hmm. say, who are all the stakeholders, potential or current, mm-hmm. that might have an interest in our cause or nonprofit? I'll take for a moment your reading initiative. Just think of how much reading and literacy is a vital part of the warp and woof of our democracy. Mm-hmm. And so every level of government, obviously all levels of schools, employers, it's a huge, huge, it would be an interesting exercise sometime for you to sit and just reflect on who are all the people that would be touched by what we're attempting to do, and whom should we involve? What one of my mentors used to call our giant hug. Isn't that so different than just going and asking for money? But right. To first involve people and to celebrate the good things that's going on.
Right. They have to have a vested interest. There's got to be a connection made somewhere, whether right. it's the people involved or the cause involved or sometimes the location. You're right there in Morristown looking to do what you do in a town you wanted to be in, right?
Right, right.
So I love that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what about the different levels of fundraising? Because you've got the high-end fundraising, right? Or then what about if someone isn't going to start at that high end, but they want to kind of get their feet wet? Are there other books or things you would recommend that people do? Like, you've probably heard of Gerald Panis. Is that, if I'm saying his name right? Like, he was a big fundraiser. So any global figures or authors that you want to recommend for people to kind of test the waters for this?
Well, first of all, I would say even more than doing books on one's own, go ahead and invest I think it's $325 a year these days, something like that, to join the professional organization right here in New Jersey, assuming your listeners are here, the Association of Fundraising Professionals, AFP, mm-hmm. of New Jersey, mm-hmm. which you can Google. Mm-hmm. And they would, especially as the pandemic gets behind us, or at least we hope will get behind us when the Delta variant subsides. But even now, the virtual work is really valuable and done very, very well excellent speakers and ability to network and to meet other people who are new or seeking to grow in the profession. And indeed, for somebody who's just interested in thinking about it, that would also be a wonderful, see if you can find somebody you know and have them invite you as a guest to come along to when the lunches are held. They're held down in Central Jersey. Mm-hmm. And so I would commend that. You mentioned Jerry Panis's books. He wrote 20.
Wow.
Jerry passed away a couple of years ago. His legacy really continues through something called the Institute for Charitable Giving. And that has about a once a week, twice a week blog, has some high-end seminars that, especially on the major gifts or capital campaign world, building relationships. The current CEO, Doug Dillon, is an old friend, and he'd be delighted to welcome you. They're not inexpensive. They're also very, very well done and were pivotal in my own development.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, just like anything else, if you're going to pursue something, you want to investigate it, but you have to invest, right? Invest in yourself, invest the time, invest the focus, and the fundraising professionals. It's an association, and then you might find a mentor, right? So it's worth investigating because it's a great career. But I think we were also talking about how important giving back in some capacity is just good for you personally and in your life and for your health and wealth and well-being. Would you agree?
Yes, and I'll address that as soon as I share one more tidbit for someone who wants to learn the profession and is willing to invest, again, some time and money. We mentioned University of Indiana.
Go Hoosiers.
Yeah, that's right. The fundraising school at University of Indiana has some very very well done online courses. One of my colleagues found it really of high quality, who is a colleague from the New York AFP chapter. And so that would be another reliable source of quality. There are many, many, some better than others, but those are two that I would certainly commend.
And that would be the Lilly School of Philanthropy, right? In Indiana. Lilly?
Yes, and part of the Lilly School. Well, the Lilly School of Philanthropy is kind of the sponsor.
Okay.
Yeah. And you asked me, what are some of the benefits of giving, and what's been learned about the world of generosity? And actually, that was a lot of what I hoped to prepare for today, because it's become really of great interest to me as at this point in my life, you know, frankly, to give from some of my own resources, modest though they may be. And I have here the book that you took a picture of, Give to Live, by Doug Lawson, which probably is all of about $5 or $10 used from Amazon. And Doug sadly just passed away in the last about 18 months, and was actually on the board of an organization where I was involved. And so it was great fun reconnecting with him, and he even endorsed this book. Doug did some of the most interesting work about 20, 25 years ago in terms of pulling together the research about the impact and effects on us of generosity. Mm-hmm. as a phenomena. And he went back to even some of the science. I mentioned a Harvard gentleman named Herb Benson, author of The Relaxation Response, also people like Dean Ornish, and these are all names from a while ago, but the science was remarkable. I mentioned Herb Benson because I got to meet him in Boston. I was a Boston person for years. And it's amazing how being generous and practicing generosity, the effects it has on one's health. Doug goes into detail of longer life, lower level of stress, a stronger immune system, hooray, right now, that's important, and even a stronger heart, he said, literally and figuratively.
Wow.
So it's almost as if being generous is almost like a muscle, and the more you do it, the more you will tend to do it and seek to do it pervasively throughout one's life. And I had fun mentioning to you that one of the precursors to my being in fundraising was to learn the habit of giving regularly. My late father used to fill out a little envelope on a desk that we, right in our home in Gillette, and he would put in so many dollars for this part of the church work and so much dollars, and then two quarters for the building fund. I can still picture it. Can you imagine that back in the day when a quarter would two quarters would get you somewhere, I guess. I mean, this is like the 50s, right?
Right.
Well, that secretary is now in my office.
Love that.
I brought it up from Florida where they passed away, and I call it the charitable giving desk. And someday, I swear, I'm going to have a blog that's titled The Charitable Giving Desk.
Perfect.
It all goes back to that. And sometimes, almost ritualistically, I like to make out checks sitting at the desk and carrying on the sort of family tradition. That gets me to say, you didn't ask, but it's a great question. Where does generosity come from? How do we learn it? And I think it's one of those things that's more caught than taught.
Huh?
That one needs models of generosity. And one of the groups I'm involved with, and actually shout out to my friend Jay Angeletti again, he referred me to somebody who actually lives right in the Basking Ridge area, who was going to start a donor-advised fund with a Christian focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, that sounds exciting. I'd like to meet the guy. So I went and we had breakfast in Morristown. And it turned out he was already starting to hire somebody because I thought, well, that would be a cool job. And he said, but, you know, we've almost hired this guy. And so once we've hired him, you know, you can meet him. So I kept in touch, and sure enough, they hired him. And I went and then met him at the Hilton in Short Hills, a guy named Jeff Smith. And Jeff started, was a catalyst, put a board together to start the New York affiliate of something called the National Christian Foundation, which now is like got $10 billion in it.
Wow.
It's just amazing. Wow. And that actually morphed into a generosity community because people said, you know, what we really need is we need to spur one another on to give with more joy and more impact and to know that we're not just alone. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Cy Seymour. He talked years and years ago, 60 years ago almost, about the pride of association is part of the essence of good fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
And that we love to give when we know that others are with us. And so that's another key part of, I think, what generosity can, where it can come from, is being in a group that is generous and inviting others in.
I agree. Right at the top of my Facebook page, I had a friend, artist friend, render it for me, but it says, philanthropy is the new community.
Yes.
So, I mean, yes. I mean, right? Because
I recall that. Yes.
We're so fragmented these days with, you know, it used to be the neighborhood or the church would bring people together and you had your resources and your support network. But now it's just not the same. You know, it's just different today. But if you've got a group, a philanthropic group, whether based on faith or based on fixing a problem or social justice or society, it's an amazing way to come together. All right, well, talk about your mask here. What's on the mask?
Yeah, one of the broad gauge groups, speaking of groups built around not necessarily faith but a cause, this is the New Jersey Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And a big shout out to Kate Lee, who is it was her brainchild, and she has built an absolute machine. It's a membership model, so there's literally hundreds of people who are, quote, members, and really together advocate and play different roles on committees to fight the scourge of human trafficking. This is the New Jersey Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And
sounds like she needs to be on the show.
Yeah, she would be a great one. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Maybe you can connect us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's easy.
Yeah.
She has a lovely, lovely British accent.
Oh, wonderful.
Yep, yep.
Right. Well, so we talked about giving with your community or getting involved with philanthropy and generosity and how it helps your life and helps everybody else's life. So what else can you tell us about either I guess I want to go back to capital campaigns, because I don't know much about capital campaigns, and you said, what's that, when you heard, and then the imagery of having those two quarters to launch a capital campaign or donate to a capital campaign, and can you kind of give, I haven't explored that realm very much, so can you kind of give us the overview of capital campaign 101?
Yeah, it's so interesting you say that, because really that's the sort of the upper end of the pyramid, if you will, of career experience and knowledge and all of that, both that and what we call legacy planning or gift planning, which with wills and trusts. And
August is Will Month, National Will Month. August right now.
Ah,
yeah,
very
so
good.
If you're thinking about it, that's what's good.
Very good. Yeah. Well, and there have been real campaigns around that. That's right. And so those two areas are kind of the, and actually that, and then the third area that's not for the faint of heart or the, your first job out is board development, mm-hmm. really building boards. Mm-hmm. And those are all three areas where really a firm like the Angeletti Group can be of great help. In fact, that's one of the most common ways that firms like ours are called on, especially the board development or capital campaigns. Essence of a capital campaign, and there are five elements, and I actually come up with their four. In marketing we have what we call the four P's, and product, place, price, and something else.
Promotion.
Product. Yeah, promotion. There you go. Very good.
I think place. There's five now. You go with the five.
Your Texas alma mater would be proud of you.
Hook 'em hard.
Right. And so I came up with the five P's for capital campaigns, which is the people, who's involved and who's leading, the prospects, who might want to be involved, could be involved in moving this cause forward, the program, what are we trying to do and achieve, more commonly called the case,
okay.
The process, when are we going to do what, mm-hmm. and basically have an orderly process, because as I mentioned earlier, fundraising is a process, mm-hmm. not an event.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the last P is preparation. What do I do to get ready and get started?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the elements. And of those, classically, what drives it is, we need to fix a building, or, we need to build a building, or whatever. And in actual fact, to really be ready for a capital campaign requires real attention to all the other elements as well. Who do you have people who have faithfully given over the years and who feel they have a personal relationship and a connection with the organization over time? Does it have a good reputation within the community for a local group? Who are the leaders? When I say people, that's the leadership. Everything rises and falls on leadership, and I think more and more our culture is highly aware of that,
mm-hmm.
and We need good leaders at every level, like government, civic, corporations, on and on and on.
Right.
So those are the areas to pay attention to. And one of the challenges, I just heard from a colleague this morning on their way down asking what I knew about a certain institution in New York, and I knew something about it, and he went on to tell me, he said, well, they want to raise X millions, but unfortunately they have hardly any donor base, and they haven't really cultivated people. And I said, that is a challenge. They're going to have a tough time.
Well, that's where a feasibility study comes in, right? Don't you do that ahead of time?
You're showing off, Nicole. Whoa.
I just throw out the terms.
That's exactly what I suggested to him. He said, well, they don't want to do a study. They just want to raise multiple millions. I said, I would go find something else to do. Because I've personally been involved, I don't know, something like 50 campaigns over my 35-year-plus career. And almost in every case where there's failure, either a study was not done or it was done poorly. Mm-hmm. So good for you. How is it you're aware of the importance of a feasibility study?
I just learn as I go because I have experts like you come and share their knowledge, and I just listen. Right?
Good for you. All right.
Well, the other thing I want to ask about is, well, recently there's been more talk about capacity building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that? Do you get involved with that at all? Or
absolutely. And I have a wonderful definition of capacity building shared by a colleague that I'll forward to you later. And it really is not just about money, but it's about everything that one can do within the organization so that it has a greater capacity to serve others and to grow and prosper as an organization on a sustainable basis. How's that?
That's perfect. I mean, and that explains it, because when it first started coming out, I'm like, what is this? What does it mean? And you succinctly...
So it really is almost a total organizational improvement. And that's what many organizations need. They're often not willing to invest the time or the dollars and so on. But again, it's a long-term game. I'm just ordered a book, Nicole, that you might find interesting. I haven't gotten it yet, but it sounds interesting. It was in the back of Barron's. Penta is an insert in Barron's, the financial newspaper. And it's the Infinite Game, published a couple of years ago. And the thesis is we as a culture have gotten caught up in short-term thinking over the last 20 or 30 years in corporate life, which has spilled over into civic life. And rather than investing for the long term, we're looking for the quick fix, or we're deferring things that need investment. And I've just exhausted what I know based on excerpts from the book, but it makes great sense. Yeah. And I recall many years ago that reading that the Japanese, for instance, have a very Asian mentality, have not just 3-year plans or 5-year plans, but 50-year plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think one need not look any further than looking, and I'm a car guy, I'm a big automobile person, and I don't get me started. But as most people would remember when Hyundai was synonymous with poor quality and almost a joke, mm-hmm. In the late 80s, early 90s, and it was like they would fall apart. And well, now Hyundai's and Kia's are competitive, mm-hmm. with by Richard Muhrenberg and Mercedes and all the rest. I mean, in some recent tests, their Genesis brand, for instance, is a very, very high quality. So how did that happen? They just same with Honda. Remember, mm-hmm. are you old enough to remember the earliest Hondas back in the 70s when they were just these little bread boxes and, you know, but they built on their knowledge of motorcycles and quality engines and so on. And look at Hondas today. Look at Honda today. So we can take a real lesson, I think, in terms of our nonprofit sector as well, to not just always defer. For instance, organization I'm with on the advisory board, we made appeal, there you go, to invest in gift planning and legacy planning. And it wasn't going to be inexpensive, both in terms of the software and as well the to staff it up. But the benefits over time to an organization when you have a group that's been nurtured over many years, to have them consider leaving a legacy to perpetuate the mission of the organization. Mm-hmm. That's how Harvard and Yale became Harvard and Yale. I mean, it started, that was a pattern 400 years ago,
wow,
and it continues to this day. And you probably wonder, why do people give to Harvard? Yeah, the rich get richer, you know, and they give out of a love, you know, veritas.
Yeah. Well, no, it's their alma mater, right? It's yeah, a community that they're proud to be part of, the pride, right?
Right.
The same thing. It's just human nature permeates.
It's really a culture. Same with Yale and yeah, any of our great schools. Yep.
Yep. Well, and I think that's important to leave your legacy, but it's also important to live your legacy right now while you're a living, breathing human being, and to do things that support your values and support causes that you care about, right? So you can leave your legacy, which is important, but you can also get involved and do things today, too.
Absolutely. In fact, if you take apart the word philanthropy, you know, we immediately think money. Mm-hmm. But actually, philanthropy, as you well know, is love of mankind or love of people. Well, how we can express that is not just, you know, it's back to the three W's of boards: wealth, wisdom, and work. And as volunteers, we can share whichever one of those or any combination of those. In fact, the ideal board member is all three. Jerry Panis used to add wallop as a fourth W. Isn't that cute?
What's the wallop? What is that?
Well, somebody who's really prominent. And,
okay.
You know, it would be like getting Bruce Springsteen to chair chair your board or something,
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah,
there you
I
go.
Love it. I love it.
And with a promise that he'd perform as well. And Jerry, in the latter part of his career, added a fifth W, which is women.
Oh.
So work, wealth, wisdom, wallop, and women.
Nice.
So if you can get somebody who's got all five, how about that?
we'll work on that. This is a recruitment show, right? Here.
But again, you make a great point about volunteerism. We can't all be philanthropists, but we can all be involved in some way, shape, or form, even if it's, I assume you have people who read to people as part of your reading program? Or
yeah, well, Room to Read is, they train teachers and librarians, they work with ministries of education, they publish books in the local languages of the kids, of the countries where we work. They published published and distributed over 20 million original title books, and they support girls in secondary school.
Wonderful.
So there's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of reading, life skills,
yep,
you know,
yep,
goal setting going on. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back.
Help make your community safer. Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers is a community-based program aimed at making our community safer by providing an avenue for citizens to anonymously report criminal activity. It provides monetary rewards if the information leads to an arrest and indictment. See something, say something, and get cash for your anonymous tip. Call or text 1-800-321-0010 or go online to www.crimestoppershunterdon.com.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help, part of Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. Today we're talking with Don Stahl. He is a vice president with the Angeletti Group. And we've talked about a lot of wonderful things today, and we're going to segue into a topic that I think is of interest to a lot of people, whether new or old, but that is donor-advised funds.
Right.
So what can you tell us about that?
Right. I guess I should ask... Go ahead. Ask you, Nicole, for our listeners, what causes you to believe that that's an important subject?
Well, I think it's just been in the news lately, and I know the only thing I really know about them is that it's a vehicle for it's a tax write off vehicle. It's got a tax implication, so you
right.
can donate and get and alleviate or avoid taxes, and then you can suggest where you want that money
that's
to
right.
go. And
that's
yeah, okay.
right. Well, very good. Well, you got it. And it's a fairly new phenomena, but it has absolutely exploded, especially in the last 5-6 years. We mentioned some of the name brands like Fidelity Charitable Fund, which is technically the largest nonprofit in the world by assets. Wow. I keep adding zeros, and I feel like I'm exaggerating. I think it's about $30 billion in Vanguard or somewhere in the 20 billion-ish range. National Christian Foundation, I shared with you, I had a hand, just a small hand, in helping start the New York affiliate, and that's where I have a giving account myself, as a matter of fact. Here's where the power of a donor-advised fund, many of them have fairly significant minimums to open in a giving account of $5,000, $10,000, especially for those of us who've had been accumulating stocks and have appreciated securities. It's a powerful way to give. As an example, let's say that you invested in Apple back, 20 years ago, and your cost basis, what we paid, it's about $150 a share. I could check while we're on the air. But well, the difference between if you were to sell tomorrow, the difference between $20 and $150 is $130 of capital gains, which is taxable, which can be a considerable tax bill. If, on the other hand, and if you have charitable intent and you are about to write a check to one of your favorite charities for, let's just use an easy number, $2,000, instead, it may very well be wise to gift a few shares of Apple, say 10 shares or 15 shares, whatever the math is, to your donor advised fund account, And then once they are liquidated and sold, you can, as you say, recommend that those dollars be forwarded to a charity as long as they are a recognized public charity and fit the purposes of the donor advised fund. And I discovered the beauty of it. I've been advising people to do it for a long time. Finally did it myself in the last couple of years, because it really is a very powerful way to give far more than you probably would just want to write a check, mm-hmm. but especially for those of us who've been blessed with some significant gains. Mm-hmm. And this is not, it can't be dollars that are in a retirement account that would be double avoiding taxation.
Right.
This would be where you have just a brokerage account and so on. But that's only one example of an appreciated asset. Some of the many of the sophisticated donor advised funds, which, of course, like everything else, has an acronym, DAFs, will take appreciated real estate, farmland, all sorts of things that have appreciated, valuable automobiles. You know, some people, not you or I probably, but some people have Ferraris that have appreciated to $2 million.
Really?
A 1965 250 GTO. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
So that can be gifted, mm-hmm. and then the proceeds spread out over a period of time. Not every donor advised fund is equipped to do that. You'd need to talk to them ahead of time. But it's a powerful, powerful tool for combining good legacy planning, tax planning, and your philanthropic intent.
Perfect. That's a good synopsis of what they're capable of doing. And we only have a few minutes left, but I don't want to leave before you share your Iowa story, because I grew up in Iowa, and you had a fun story about some work that you did in my home state.
Right, right. Giving back can come in a wide variety of ways, and as you and I were chuckling, I had the privilege of living in Clear Lake, Iowa for a period of time, and I was approached by some people in the community. The historic Surf Ballroom had just changed hands and was chained shut, and people were very upset. It's an iconic place. It's a place where Buddy Holly, the Bopper, and Ritchie Valens all took off on the fateful flight of February 4th, 1959, and the day the music died, you know. And so they said, gee, do you think we could turn the Surf into a nonprofit? And people have been talking about it for years, but nobody had stepped forward and figured it out. And I said, you know, I don't know, but we can certainly try, and it would make sense to make it a museum, you know, to make it a museum of the, really its rock and roll history. Mm-hmm. Well, we got several people to each put in $10,000 a piece to create some initial funding and create the nonprofit statement and all the rest. So exciting to tell you that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland has designated the Surf Ballroom to be one of the 10 great venues of rock and roll, and it continues to this day with the Winter Dance. It'll be a cold, cold February night, but there you go. You know how those Iowa yeah. nights can be.
yeah.
But very exciting, and it's an example of where people coming together of goodwill to make something happen through the power of philanthropy, of caring about their community. It's a key driver of economic success for that region of North Iowa.
I love it. I'll have to stop by there next time I'm visiting my dad. So
please do.
Well, thank you, Don, for sharing your expertise and your time today. It's a wealth of information, and thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
U.S. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Hiding in plain sight on page 508 of the U.S. Senate's 2,700-plus page infrastructure bill are the plans for a national per-mile fee pilot program, and it's exactly what it sounds like. The more you drive, the more you pay. If passed, the Secretary of Transportation would start putting together the $10 million program no more than 90 days after the bill's passage. Former President Barack Obama has scaled back his 60th birthday mega bash in Martha's Vineyard, citing the spread of coronavirus's Delta variant. A statement said, due to the new spread of the Delta variant over the past week, the President and Mrs. Obama have decided to significantly scale back the event to include only family and close friends. End quote. Germany sent a warship to the South China Sea on Monday for the first time since 2002. China says the nearly 1.3 million square mile area in the South China Sea are within its sovereign territory due to language in the Law of the Sea Convention. USA Radio News.
Hey, some big news. Eric Bolling is back on TV with a new show. Tune into Newsmax every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern and watch Eric Bolling on The Balance. Eric is the balance to big media, woke politics, and cancel culture. All this week, Eric is exposing the dangers of Joe Biden's inflation. It's already rising big time, and it could wipe out your stocks, bonds, cash, even your retirement. So get the truth about Biden and find your balance. Watch Eric Bolling on Newsmax at 4 p.m. Eastern today. More than 30 million Americans watch Newsmax. It's on all major cable systems. If your operator doesn't carry it, call them. Tell them you want it. Plus, find Newsmax free on streaming systems like Roku, Samsung, LG, Pluto, Zumo, and more. Or download the free Newsmax app on your phone and watch it anytime, anywhere. More than 30 million Americans are tuning into Newsmax because it's real news for real people.
Disgraced Democrat Governor Andrew Cuomo slammed by the New York Attorney General's office for sexual misconduct and creating a toxic work environment is defiant for calls to resign.
But they read into comments that I made and draw inferences that I never meant. They ascribe motives I never had. And simply put, they heard things that I just didn't say. Charlotte, I want you to know that I am truly and deeply sorry. I brought my personal experience into the workplace, and I shouldn't have done that. I was trying to help. Obviously, I didn't. I am even more sorry that I further complicated the situation. My goal was the exact opposite. I wish nothing but good for you and for all survivors of sexual assault.
USA Radio News.
Lights out, everybody.
Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet.
Pleasant dreams.
The greatest radio shows of all time, USA Classic Radio Theater, on these radio stations or on demand by searching USA Classic Radio Theater, USA Classic Radio Theater.
As calls for Democrat Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York to resign after sexual harassment and other charges were discovered by the New York Attorney General's office, Cuomo remains defiant. Brad Bernards reports.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo faced mounting pressure Tuesday to resign and other one-time Democratic allies after an investigation found he sexually harassed nearly a dozen women and worked to retaliate against one of his accusers. I think he should resign, Biden told reporters Tuesday, echoing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and New York's U.S. Senators Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, all Democrats.
And I do believe he should resign.
We continue to believe that the governor should resign.
Accepting responsibility means stepping down. So I don't believe him, and I don't want an apology. It's not necessary. It's fake.
The leader of the state assembly, which has the power to bring impeachment charges, said it was clear Cuomo could no longer remain in office. Speaker Carl Heastie, a Democrat, said he would move to complete an impeachment inquiry as quickly as possible. Cuomo remained defiant in a tape response to the findings.
I want you to know directly from me that I never touched anyone inappropriately or made inappropriate sexual advances. My attorney, who is a non-political former federal prosecutor, has done a response to each allegation.
From the USA Radio News West Texas Bureau, I'm Brad Bernards.
For USA Radio News, I'm Lance Pry.